bill that we'd presented to the New South Wales Parliament, which was our best endeavours to live up to the promise that the Parliament made to the families in November 2014 when everyone in the upper house in New South Wales, doesn't matter what party they were from, came together and made a promise to do all they could to deliver justice. We think part of that was clearing away an unnecessary legal obstacle under the double jeopardy laws. We put a bill to do that, came onto the vote last week, and all those promises, well, the majority of those promises end up being pretty hollow. We ended up getting support from the Greens. You know, we presented the bill, my colleagues, the Reverend Fred Nile and those Christian Democrats came on and supported it. We even had the Shooters Party come on and support it, and the one MP from the Animal Justice. So we got that, if you like, rainbow coalition together, but we were voted down by the combined vote of Labor and the coalition, and that meant that that opportunity to fix up the law was pretty much shut down.
So last time I spoke to you was when you submitted last time and that you were actually pushing for it to be taken to the Attorney-General to look at one of their recommendations around a judge actually being included in the inquiry that was outside the jurisdiction of New South Wales. So where are you with that now?
So the legislative path has pretty much been shut down. Both Labor and the Coalition said that they weren't interested in amending the law. We say clarifying the law so that the law in New South Wales matched the law in the United Kingdom on double jeopardy, and that would have been the easiest path to justice for the families. That having happened, the police are now presenting this fresh application under the existing laws that has to go to the Attorney General to see whether or not the Attorney General will consent, give her agreement, to allow it to go to court, to the Court of Criminal Appeal. So it's complicated, the double jeopardy laws, but there's a three-step process. The first step is the police or the family make an application to the Attorney General, and if the Attorney General consents to the application, well then that allows them to file the application in the Court of Criminal Appeal, and the Court of Criminal Appeal then hears all the evidence and works out whether or not there's fresh evidence, works out if the interests of justice are in favour of a retrial, and if they then agree, then they refer it back down to the lower courts for a full retrial on the three murders. And that's what we're trying to do now. We're at the first stage of that process. The police are presenting the application to the Attorney General, seeking the Attorney General's consent. Now, this has happened twice before. Different Attorney Generals, different DPPs, and sometimes the Attorney General will refer the matter to the Director of Public Prosecutions, the DPP, to make the decision. But yeah, twice before police have made the application, police and family have made the application, and twice they've been rejected. And they've been rejected for quite contrary reasons. The first time, the then DPP thought that the evidence was fresh but not compelling. The second time, the Attorney General thought the evidence was compelling but not fresh. Mm-hmm. The families, quite rightly, are thinking, well, if there's going to be any merit in a third application, any sort of genuine sense of fairness in a third application, then it needs to be seen by an entirely fresh set of eyes. Someone from outside of New South Wales, a senior prosecutor, a senior judge from outside of New South Wales who'll be able to look at it with a fresh set of eyes, not already jaded. That was one of the recommendations from the inquiry, and we had the New South Wales Premier confirm that they'd agreed that they'll be referring the fresh application to a genuinely independent set of eyes. And there's still a beating heart, if you like, in the cause for justice.
I don't understand what the block is. I mean, you've got police who have gathered evidence who are saying, we need to do this. I mean, this is an old case. This is, I mean, it's not just being a case. It's children's lives. It's families' lives.
Now, we're talking the end of 1990, the beginning of 1991. And you're quite right. I mean, Bill said, well, you know, what's the block? You've got three dead children. You've got a compelling brief of evidence that's been gathered together against just one person. There's this, you know, compelling brief of evidence to suggest should be brought to trial for the three murders. And the families say, look, unless all three murders are tried together, and that's never happened before, there's been two individual trials for just two of the murders, and on each of those trials he was acquitted. But the families say, look, unless all the evidence for all three murders is presented in the one trial, they're not going to get a real shot at justice. And to understand how that works at law, probably the best example is the Ivan Milat backpacker case. Now, Ivan Milat was eventually tried and convicted with the murder of eight individual backpackers. He murdered them all, picked them up in his van and buried them in the Belangolo forest. Now, if each of those individual murders had been tried separately, they'd had eight separate trials, it's almost certain that Ivan Milat would have been acquitted in each and every one of them, and he'd still be walking amongst us. Because what ultimately convicted Ivan Milat was the fact that he was in a similar place, in similar circumstances, at or about the time of each of these individual murders. And he was, you know, on the same road, in the same forest. And it was the cumulative case that eventually persuaded a jury that this man was guilty beyond reasonable doubt. And it's the same, the police are saying the same in relation to the Bowraville murders. They've got at least 14 separate links between this one individual and each and every one of the murders. You know, same car, same person, last person seen, these continuous links. And unless they can present all three of them in the same trial, well, justice won't be served.
I want to take it back to the parliamentary inquiry into the Bowraville murders, because you were part of that committee and you handed down, was it 15 recommendations? How does it work with the recommendations, where obviously Parliament work within the recommendations?
Yeah. So the recommendations are handed from Parliament to the Executive, and then the Executive, you know, which is the government, the Premier and the Cabinet, decide how they're going to respond to the recommendations. They've largely adopted all of the recommendations that have been presented by the inquiry. That's the reason we're getting the independent review of this next application, because that was recommendation 9 of the inquiry, that it go to a whole fresh set of eyes. The government accepted that recommendation at the time, and, you know, I'll give them credit where it's due. They've stuck by that commitment, and they're going to send the fresh application to an independent set of eyes. The other recommendation, though, was to review the double jeopardy laws to see about picking up the UK model or the WA model, or clarifying what the meaning of this one bloody word adduced means, which has been, it's been the bugbear, if you like, in this fresh application case. Now, the government then sent it off for a review by a bloke, that question of clearing up the legislative roadblock was sent off to a report from Justice Wood, former Law Reform Commissioner. And he came back and he said, well, the law hasn't been tested. There hasn't been a case that's gone to the Court of Criminal Appeal to test the meaning and the operation of the existing laws. They've been on the statute books for 2006. So until it's tested, you can't really say if it needs to be fixed. Well, look, the obvious answer to that is, well, it's never been tested, because the Attorney General, and before her the previous Attorney General and previous DPPs, have had a very constrained view of the law, which prevents the application ever getting to court. They're refusing to give consent to get it before the court to have the actual legislation tested. So it's kind of like a, you know, dog chasing its tail in the eye of the New South Wales government and Justice Wood. They say, well, look, we can't fix it up until we know what it means. We don't know what it means until it goes to court to be tested. Because they think that it has a certain meaning, they're never going to let it go to court and be tested. It's this sort of catch-22 situation for the families that, you know, you can see why they're distraught about it.